The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And I know Andrea is on a series of daily life practice. Last time I also contributed and talked to that. So I thought today I'll add to that series as well. And I was thinking of using the Satipatthana Sutta as a reference for daily life practice. And the Satipatthana Sutta is an important sutta in the Pali canon, so in the discourses of the Buddha that he gave. This is the sutta, the discourse that's often being used as the foundation for our Vipassana, our mindfulness practice. And in this discourse, in this sutta, the Buddha mentions four foundations of mindfulness. So Satipatthana means four foundations of mindfulness. So it is the discourse on those four foundations. And those four are body, feeling tone, mind, and dhammas. So my plan is to go systematically through all these categories to see what the Buddha says about practicing in daily life, which is actually a lot. these foundations can basically be practiced in our daily lives as well. We don't have to constrain ourselves to our meditation cushion. So I'll give the direct quotes from the sutta. And I'm using the translation by Bhikkhu Bodhi. And just in case you want to look it up. And it is Majjhima Nikaya number 10. And the quotes, I hope, will give also inspiration for your daily life practice. And the Buddha starts out this sutta with the comment that those being aware of those four foundations of mindfulness is the direct path to awakening. So I'll give the quote from the start of the sutta. And Bhikkhu Bodhi uses the word bhikkhus, and it basically means practitioners. So I'll just use the word practitioners. Practitioners, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, the realization of Nibbana, awakening, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. So how wonderful is this? By just being aware of those four foundations, we are on the path of purification, on our way to surmount all sorrow and lamentation, on our way to the disappearance of pain and grief, and on our way to the realization of awakening, or Nibbana in Pali. So this simple awareness can lead to a lot of nice things. And also to awakening. So the Buddha starts out with the first of the foundations, which is the body. And the Buddha gives several ways in which we can contemplate or be aware of the body. And the first is the breath. He starts out with the breath and he says, "And how, practitioners, does a practitioner abide contemplating the body as body? Ever mindful, he breathes in. Mindful, he breathes out." So the breath is actually a great basis for our practice because our breath is always available. So whenever in doubt, we can pay attention to the breath. And it's really helpful in our daily lives to help calm the mind. Like if we spend a few times a day, just a few moments of being aware of the breath, like just setting all the other things aside for a moment and just tune into the breath for just two or three breaths, is really helpful in just grounding and stabilizing the mind and calming a little bit, especially when we feel a little like off or not, you know, not so grounded, can be a real support in our daily life. And just on a side note, the breath is not for everyone. I mean, some people have some lung issues or some other things going on around the chest area. And then it's not so helpful to use the breath. But for most people, it will be a very good meditation object. So, and the Buddha also gives other ways to be aware of the body, which I'll go now, which is the next section in the sutta. There the Buddha says, practitioners, when walking, a practitioner understands I am walking. When standing, he understands I am standing. When sitting, he understands I am sitting. When lying down, he understands I'm laying down. Or he understands accordingly, however his body is disposed. So you might recognize in the meditation I used the posture of sitting posture, being aware of sitting. And we can do that with all postures, basically. So this is a real simple way of being aware, just being aware of whatever the posture the body is in. And this is also always available. We can always kind of check in, oh, what posture is the body in right now? It's really simple to notice. And sometimes the body might be in between postures. This is also possible, of course. Or maybe we're not really sitting, but slouching on the couch. Well, you can see that as slouching, maybe. So it's really nice in daily life, a nice way of being aware, because when we're meditating, it's just usually sitting or walking, and that's all we can know. But in daily life, it changes a lot. We are usually changing body posture quite a bit during the day. Just from laying down to standing up when we wake up in the morning, or when we are working on a desk and we get up to go to the bathroom, or when we walk to the grocery store, or even just from our couch to the kitchen, we're walking. And then we're standing in the kitchen, maybe making food, or all these kind of little moments where we can be aware of oh yeah, this posture is here right now. And then the next segment of the body. The body is quite a big chunk of the sutta. So here the Buddha says, practitioners. A practitioner is one who acts in full awareness when going forward and returning, who acts in full awareness when looking ahead and looking away, who acts in full awareness when flexing and extending his limbs, who acts in full awareness when wearing his robes and carrying his outer robe and bowl, who acts in full awareness when eating, drinking, consuming food and tasting, who acts in full awareness when defecating and urinating, who acts in full awareness when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking and keeping silent. So I think this section is pretty cool because it is naming so many of our daily activities over here. It's like, you know, just being aware of the movement of the body, when we're looking away, when we're looking ahead, when we're flexing and extending limbs, the wearing of clothing. Normally we're not aware of the touch of the clothing on the skin, for example. That's something that is so kind of not in our present awareness. Usually we have to be pointed out that it's actually clothing touching our skin. Aware of eating, drinking, going to the bathroom, falling asleep, waking up, talking, keeping silent. Like so many things he's naming here. And I think we can extend it to whatever we're doing during the day. We can be mindful of. It's really a clear indication of, like, don't just be mindful on your cushion, also do it during all these things that we're doing in our daily lives. Also be mindful then. So it's really integrated daily life practice in this sutta. And then as an example, maybe we could be mindful during our meals. And maybe you sit down on the table and you can be aware of just sitting down, and then aware of seeing the food in front of you, aware of the smell of the food, aware of holding the fork or spoon, and movement to scoop up the food. Then you can feel the weight of the food on the fork or the spoon. Then you put it in your mouth, you feel the texture and the taste of the food, chewing, the swallowing, and there's this leftover taste in the mouth of the food. You know, there's so many little things we can be aware of in every moment. If we just take this little example of eating, there's a lot going on. And so in the next section, the Buddha goes deeper into some specific body contemplations. And I won't go into those today because then this talk would be way too long. So I'll just name them so you know which one they are, and maybe you've heard of them already, but then it's a little refresher. So there's the contemplation of the 32 parts of the body. There's the contemplation of the four elements and the charnel ground contemplations. So those are also in the sutta and also a very interesting way of practicing. So this far, we've only talked about the body. So only still the first foundation. And basically what the first foundation is about is everything that comes at the five sense doors, five physical sense doors. So the seeing, the hearing, the tasting, the touching, and all the body sensations, including the breath and movements and the postures. And then we get to the second foundation of mindfulness. And in Pali, it's called Vedana. And in English, it's often translated as feeling tone. And feeling tone is in the realm of the mind. So it's not really the body anymore. So it's an aspect of the mind. And in the translation of Bhikkhu Bodhi, it says just feeling. But it's a little bit confusing to me because normally we speak about feelings like, oh, I'm a little sad or I'm happy or, you know, that kind of feelings. But the Vedana, what I like to refer to as feeling tone, is about the bare affective tone of experience. There's only three tones, three feeling tones, which is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So that's also what I refer to in the meditation, the being aware of those three feeling tones. And the Buddha says in the sutta, and how, practitioners, does a practitioner abide contemplating feelings as feelings? So feeling tones, but this is Bhikkhu Bodhi. Here, when feeling a pleasant feeling, a practitioner understands, I feel a pleasant feeling. When feeling a painful feeling, he understands, I feel a painful feeling. When feeling a neither pleasant nor painful feeling, he understands, I feel a neither pleasant nor painful feeling. So, Vedana, feeling tone, we can maybe see it as asking a question like, how do we feel about what happens in body and mind? Is the current experience pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Which is neither pleasant nor unpleasant in the sutta. It says neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So each experience in our lives will come with a feeling tone that's just inherent in all experience. As soon as we experience something, let's say a sound, or maybe a taste, or a touch, or even a thought, there's an automatic response of that it is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So, like with the eating example, each of those different experiences, lifting the spoon, tasting the food, chewing, will have this affective tone to it. And maybe often like taste is an easy place to be aware of feeling tone, because we usually have you know, a lot of preference for certain types of food or tastes. But yeah, it's possible to notice it with other experiences as well. In general, it is a bit hard to be aware of feeling tone, though. It's not super obvious. It's not as obvious as body experiences, for example. And then especially the neutral feeling tone is a bit hard to spot, kind of glance over it, because it is that, has that kind of, can turn into that kind of delusional kind of spacing out feeling. So, and on a retreat, I once experimented with observing feeling tone, really digging into this feeling tone experience while eating. And then at some point there, I felt like these moments where I wasn't really sure if the taste was pleasant or unpleasant. And it was just kind of neutral. And I was like, oh, wait, this is the neutral feeling tone. So maybe that's a good place to try to experiment with feeling tone, the food. And some other tips to learn how to discern feeling tone is that what happens often, and I think I mentioned that in the meditation as well, is that the pleasant feeling tone often turns into desire or wanting, while the unpleasant feeling tone often turns into aversion or resistance. And it is way easier to be aware of the mind once it has turned into desire or aversion than once it's just still in the feeling tone stage. So every time we experience this desire or aversion, we can look like, oh, is this indeed pleasant or unpleasant? Like, is this feeling tone present here? And that way we can work ourselves back to feeling tone. That's a little easier than trying to figure out the feeling tone right away. And like I said, the neutral feeling tones often turn into delusion or confusion. And that is even a little bit harder to detect than the pleasant and unpleasant tones. So, but feel free to experiment with that as well, of course. Now we get to the third foundation in the sutta. There, the Buddha says, and how practitioners does a practitioner abide contemplating mind as mind? Here a practitioner understands mind affected by lust as mind affected by lust, mind unaffected by lust as mind unaffected by lust. He understands mind affected by hate as mind affected by hate, and mind unaffected by hate as mind unaffected by hate. He understands mind affected by delusion as mind affected by delusion, and mind unaffected by delusion as mind unaffected by delusion. And then in the sutta, the Buddha just continues with this understanding of what the mind is, with several other examples like contracted, distracted, exalted, surpassed, unsurpassed, concentrated, unconcentrated, liberated, and unliberated. But the quote became a little long, so I thought I'd cut it off here. And then Bhikkhu Bodhi, in an article, he also advises to, for practical purposes, he says, it is sufficient at the outset to focus at the first six states, which I quoted, observing whether the mind is associated with any of the three unwholesome roots or is free from them. So the roots that were the unwholesome roots that were mentioned were lust or desire, you can also translate it as desire, hate or aversion, I would say, and then delusion. So in the sutta, it was called lust, hate, and delusion. So the sutta kind of encourages us to be aware, are these mind states present or absent? And just simply be aware Are they present or absent? And eating example again, when we taste the food, maybe we can be aware of the desire for more food, another bite or another serving. Or we don't like the food and we feel aversion. Or maybe we're just tuning out and just shuffling the food in. It could be delusion then, maybe. Or maybe the unwholesome roots are not present. That could also be. And then can we become aware of that they're not present? Like tasting the food and we feel just equanimous. Or we are eating and we might feel very generous to share it with someone. Like maybe we share it with our partner, or some people share their food with their dog. And what I think is really cool about this section in the sutta is that it's actually really dry. It says, just be aware of these states. And it doesn't say like, oh, be upset that there is hate right now in your mind. It just says, be aware that it's there. It's really dry, and we don't have to, so we don't have to be upset or discouraged by these, the presence of these unwholesome states. We only have to be aware of them and understand, oh, the mind is affected by lust, or the mind is affected by hate, or not affected by these mind states. There's no judgment. That's the cool thing, I think, about this section. It really simplifies our lives, I think. So that was the mind, foundation of minds. And then the fourth foundation, the last foundation, is Dhammas in Pali. And often it's just not being translated because it is such a, it's not easy to translate this category. Now, Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as mind objects. But what it basically comes down to in the sutta is that this section just lists various Buddhist lists. So these are then the mind objects, I guess. And the lists that are mentioned in the sutta, I will name them. The first list is the five hindrances. The second list is the five aggregates. Then the six sense bases, the seven factors of enlightenment, and the four noble truths. So obviously you won't have time to go into all of these lists. It would be like each of them deserves their own series of talks. It's a lot in there. But you might already be familiar with one or more of these lists. And maybe you've heard talks about them before. I think Andrea has given talks about them before. And there's a lot of information on them on the Audio Dharma website as well. But the basic point here is that each of these lists can be a support in our daily life practice. So each of these lists can function as like a viewpoint, or like the glasses we look through in our practice. Like if I take the hindrances real quick as an example, and like the sense desire is one of the hindrances, ill will, sloth and torpor, is one, and then restlessness and remorse is one, and doubt, there are the five hindrances. And then the Buddha just basically says, be aware of these five aspects, if they're in the mind or not. And also to be aware of, how do they come to be? How do they arise? And how can we prevent them from arising? How can we abandon them? So there's just kind of an encouragement to be aware of, in this case, the hindrances or any of the other lists in our lives, in our daily lives, and see, are they present or absent, just as with the mind objects, or the mind that we saw earlier, and the third foundation. And then also an encouragement to see how the arising of the hindrances come to be and how the abandoning comes to be, And how can we prevent the hindrances from arising in the future? And in that way, we can use it as a way to look at our practice in daily life, like just seeing, are they present or absent, and how do they arise and be abandoned, and etc. What I just said. So it's just a filter, actually. And I wouldn't encourage you to do all lists, but just pick one if you're interested, and then use it as a filter to gain more understanding and wisdom about your own practice and your own mind. So just like every time we practice like that, every time we use like a way to look at the reality, we can collect data about our own minds. And then this data, this information, like in the background, our minds will grow wisdom, and insights might form. And you might have to see our patterns and our stuff like over and over again, but at some point, an insight might arise. So these are just helpful tools to observe what is happening in the mind as we live our daily lives. Helpful tools in collecting this data and growing wisdom. And so the point of the talk is that that the Satipatthana Sutta actually has a lot of daily life practice in it. Just to show that, to give inspiration. It is really packed with useful instructions on how to be aware in daily life. It's not only like a sit on your cushion kind of sutta. Each of these four foundations are super rich areas of exploration in our practice. So we can either just pick one area, one of those foundations to practice with, or maybe in a more open awareness kind of style, just go about our daily lives and see whatever comes most prominently in our awareness in any given moment. And that will change from moment to moment. Like one moment we might have a body experience, and sometimes we might be more aware of like the mind or the feeling tone. Might become aware of pleasant, unpleasant, or the craving or aversion. Or we might be recognizing hindrances coming up or aspects of the other lists that are in the Satipatthana Sutta. So these are all valid ways to be mindful. And it's not that one of them is better than the other. It's just about cultivating mindfulness, cultivating awareness in our daily lives, in whatever way it works for us. And it's impossible to be mindful of all of these aspects at the same time. So don't get yourself worked up too much. And just simply pay attention of this present moment experience, whatever comes up in this present moment. That's the simplest explanation of the Satipatthana Sutta. I could have spared myself the whole talk. And then I just want to end with how the sutta ends, which is about the same as that it started with. And it goes like this. So it was with reference to this that it was said, practitioners, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of Nibbana, awakening, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. That is what the Blessed One said. The practitioners were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So that was what I wanted to say for the Dharma talk. Then I'll have some time for questions or sharing. If you want to share something or have a question, feel free to unmute and ask or put it in the chat.
Can you contrast that with just being in awareness?
Yeah. So the thing is that, like, it is kind of a map. These four foundations are kind of a map that show us like what can we be aware of? And just being in awareness means that we just let everything come and go, just this open awareness, everything can just arise and pass away, and we pay attention to whatever is most obviously present. So we're not like actively using the map that much when we practice like that. But it's still valid. Like whatever comes up, whether we use the map or not, it will be something in the body, will be feeling tone, will be something in the mind or some of the dhammas. It basically encompasses all that we can experience this map. So it's more about knowing that this map exists and use it if we want to. And if we feel like, oh, yeah, the open awareness or just being in awareness with whatever comes up is enough for me, that is also a completely valid way of practicing and a really nice way of practicing. So, yeah, it's more like a bit of information in the background for the mind. Like just, yeah, that it can use or not use. It doesn't matter too much. It's just kind of more of like laying out the map that the Buddha gave us of how we can be, what we can be present for. So we know a little bit like, oh, this is the body. Oh, this is Vedana. This is feeling tone. Or yeah, we can start to recognize these things. Someone asked in a direct message, when I start to be aware that I spaced out, I feel upset. So is it aversion or delusion or both? So when you space out, it often can be delusion. So just confusion, delusion happening. And once we realize that we're spacing out, this is a new moment, right? So then maybe aversion comes up, like feel upset. So then the aversion has come up. So it's two different things in a row. So first there's the spacing out, and then that could be delusion. And then the next thing happens, which is aversion, the upsetness, is then the aversion. So it's two, but it's not at the same time. It's two different moments.
Can you speak a little bit more about delusion and what that encompasses? I also have this idea that delusion kind of underlies greed and hatred, and I don't know, it's kind of a broad concept that we don't talk about very much in detail so much, I guess.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And delusion, sometimes it's moha in Pali, and it's sometimes also translated as confusion. So delusion is about not clearly seeing, not clearly knowing what is happening. So it's like basically the opposite of wisdom. So we're just not seeing clearly. Well, if wisdom is present, we see what is happening really clearly. We see the three characteristics, and we see the unwholesome roots and the wholesome roots arising and passing. And when delusion is present, we don't see all that. We're kind of, that's why sometimes we say, yeah, we're kind of spaced out, but it doesn't have to come with a feeling of spacing out. It can just, it's all these moments in the day where we're actually not really knowing what's going on, which are usually most of the moments in our day. All these moments where there's just not a clear knowing of or seeing what's happening. And it can be a spacing out. It can be like a confusion. Like, you know, Sharon Salzberg has a beautiful talk on, I think, all three. And so craving, aversion and delusion. And in the delusion part, she gives an example of a friend, and she was, we're traveling in India, and they're arriving in a hostel in a room, and her friend was like, oh, I want that bed over there. There are two beds, and her friend wanted that bed, and Sharon was like, oh, okay, I'll take the other one. And she was like, oh, later, like, oh, why did you actually want that bed? And Sharon is kind of a delusional type. She calls herself a delusional type. And their friend was like, yeah, this bed, it's India. So how do you call this, mosquito net things over your bed? Yeah, this bed has one that doesn't have holes in it, and yours has holes in it. And this bed is next to the light switch, so I can control when the light goes on and off. And your bed is next to the window, and then this draft will come into the room. And she had seen all these little things that Sharon was like completely unaware of, and she's kind of like obliviously living her life. So that's kind of the difference between someone knowing what's happening and someone who is, yeah, more of in a delusional state of mind. I think that's a good example of how delusion works. When you experience it, you just don't really see what's happening. Yeah. Does that make it a little clearer? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, good.